The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Good morning, and welcome to another Trumpet Daily radio program. Your regular host, Stephen Fleury, returned to Edmond late last night or early this morning. He's returning from three successful nights of campaigns that were held in Detroit and Cincinnati. I'm your guest host, Andrew Locher, and I'm very happy to share this time with you here this morning. We were very pleased with the last-minute increase in attendance for both of those campaign cities in Detroit and Cincinnati. Altogether, I think we had about 100 to 150 different Trumpet subscribers that attended combined in those two cities. That doesn't include our membership that was there to listen as well. And those numbers are really encouraging because we don't have that strong of a or that large of a congregation, you could say, in Detroit. It's strong. I didn't mean to insinuate that, but not that many in number. And so when you have almost twice as many people attend these campaigns as we do those that attend services in the areas, that's really, I think, a very good sign. We had people come from Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, Michigan, and Ontario, as far as I know, for those two cities. Next on the itinerary is Chicago, and then that's followed by Indianapolis for a one-night stop in Indy. That's about 3 weeks from now, so there's still time to register, still time to attend. We, of course, encourage you to do so. I'll probably say that a few minutes later from now as well. We are back in school, and as painful as it was to get into a different routine, I believe my family and I are getting there. Morning drop-offs of my youngest daughter's cello, but only on certain days. Then there's dance practice, but again, only on certain days. Private music lessons, homework, hopefully a little bit of work or chores around the house, making time for exercise, reading, eating right, and of course my favorite, getting enough sleep. Healthline.com, my new favorite website, says that we should get at least 9 hours of sleep a night. Wouldn't that be great? If only we had time to do that, that would be refreshing, but that's not the life that we live. We're all good at establishing routines, or hopefully we are. And then we have to change those routines and then change them again. You've all been there. I know we're not the only ones. It is amazing, though, how much you can accomplish if you're organized, if you exercise self-discipline, if you do try to maintain a routine. We don't want to sleep our lives away, that's for sure. About 2 weeks ago, I was honored to participate in the 2019 Canadian Deacon and Elders meeting in Milton, Ontario. Mr. John McDonald is the regional director of the PCG up in Canada, and he brought in all the ministry, all the deacons and their wives from all over Canada, and we had a two-day educational conference. The conference, this is the second time we've done this now in the past several years. It is very unifying, and there was a marked increase in just the unity among all of us up there, because it's pretty rare to get all of that leadership together. And yet it's all so beneficial because it does ensure that we're saying and conducting ourselves and the work of God, that we're all doing the same thing. Mr. McDonald put heavy emphasis on serving God's way. He talked about the need for the leadership to develop character themselves, to have and build and grow in wisdom, and how to be a more effective elder. We had other lectures about the importance of godly prayer. We talked about the Elisha work, and we talked about being organized. And this was a pretty unique leadership conference for us because right in the middle, we had just a half day of lectures, and then we were all tested. We all got in our cars and drove down to Toronto because a public appearance campaign was scheduled for that afternoon. I'd like to call it a deacon fest. There are so many deacons there serving. It was amazing. Everything was very well attended. There's a lot of people signing up for more activities. But some of our deacons, this was their first opportunity to attend a public appearance campaign, or at least in Canada. Some had experienced one or more, but it was a fantastic opportunity for us to put into practice what we had just learned. I was amazed at the organization and the structure that we all enjoyed there. Just a great opportunity to put into practice everything that we were learning. Now, Mr. Hilliker gave us his perspective earlier this week on two different TDR appearances. Those campaigns really are special events, and I hope you get a chance to participate in one someday. While I was up there in Canada, we also had a Bible study, and we had combined services for about 150 different brethren. I love going up to Canada. There's a lot of old friends. There are some new attendees that are really excited, and you could tell that immediately they're going to be good friends as well. God's work is really growing in Canada. For the Bible study, I spoke about the daily, and I drew attention to the many positive indicators that the work in Canada is really growing. God is doing more and more up in Canada. I had mentioned to them that we were just about to launch into the new school year, and we had, I believe, 26 or 27 incoming freshmen. I told them the student body is made up of Canadians, Americans, Filipinos, Australians, Zimbabweans, Tanzanians, I believe, there's Dutch, there are British. Last year, the church invested about $2 million in our educational programs. I want to give you some of the statistics that I shared with them in our Bible study. The work is really growing up in Canada. The waiting room program for our magazine has added tens of thousands of new subscribers to waiting rooms. We're getting responses from all over the world. In Canada, they conducted what we call the Toronto Subway Program, where they use newsstands to distribute a couple hundred thousand, or at least 100,000 different issues, different copies. How do I say this right? It went on for about a year. So about 100,000 different magazines were distributed on that Toronto Subway Program. The three-year comparison for the growth in Canada, I think, is pretty interesting. We have our call center that we run here in the same building where the studio is on our headquarters campus. It's in the mail processing center, and we host operators here. We have operators that volunteer their time that work on our Watts line, and we can analyze the calls we take from Canada because those calls are routed here as well. In 2016, about 9.4% of our call volume originated from Canada. And within 3 years, that had grown to almost 12%. The percentage of circulation of our periodicals, both the Trumpet and the Royal Vision, has also increased. In 2016, about 7% of our total circulation of the Trumpet magazine was mailed to Canadian addresses. By 2018, that had increased to almost 13%. The same rough statistics apply, the same percentages or percentage increase applies to the Royal Vision as well. We have 7 or 8 students, I believe, right now from Canada. That makes up about just a little bit less than 10% of our student body. I told them that we have heard from at least 90,000 different Canadians that have requested the Trumpet magazine, that are attending services, it's really pretty exciting. We don't have 90,000 members up there, of course. And we don't even have 90,000 active subscribers now, but we have heard from a lot of Canadians. About 10% of the church's membership is Canadian. Canada has the second highest total number of people attending of all countries in the world, second to the United States. We have about 3 times as many Canadian members as we do British and Europeans combined. And we have about 10 times as many Canadians as we do people from New Zealand. We talked about, just again, the Philadelphia Trumpet circulation. It peaked in September 2018 because we had that Toronto Subway program. That month, we mailed over 37,800 different Trumpet magazines into subscribers' homes or into newsstands or put on that Subway program. This year, it scaled back because we've taken a break from the Toronto Subway program, but still over 27,400 magazines are mailed per month into Canada. That equates to over 250,000 throughout the course of the year. 250,000 copies of the Plain Truth, or excuse me, the Philadelphia Trumpet. One final area to mention here, I talked about the income in Canada this year, which is exceptional. It's increased right now about 20 to 25% over the same period of time last year. It's the highest amount of income we've ever received in the first 7 months in Canada. So you can expect greater things from the Canadian regional office. They are very supportive of various international programs around the world. We support a lot of our foreign language translation program in the Spanish language through Canadian resources. They pay for the printing, the shipping, the postage. They pay all of that for all Spanish language literature all over the world. As I mentioned, a large portion of our college enrollment comes from Canada. One thing is for certain, as you step back and look at this wonderful work, this Philadelphia Church of God, we are large. We are all over the globe. We have a lot of different nationalities. It's a very diverse family, a family church. And that's what makes it so special. Students share their culture, their experience in activities or classes. They give speeches about their homeland. And it's a really excellent part, a very meaningful part of the educational programs here at the college. And so hopefully that gives you a little idea of what's going on in Canada. Again, it's just been a year of really, I'd characterize it as explosive growth. Very exciting to see that happen, especially in light of the fact that, again, the Canadians are so generous in helping other areas of the world that might not enjoy the same financial blessings. Well, I'd like to contrast that a little bit with world news. Mr. Hilliker mentioned that Detroit, I think he mentioned this yesterday, has been under one party's leadership since about the mid-1950s. If I remember correctly. And look at how the city has been destroyed since that time. I'm not blaming it all on one party or another. If you just look at the United States in general or the end time nations of Israel, you see them failing in all political parties. But one in particular seems to get pretty feisty when their fruits are examined. It is interesting to just look at the fruits. And that's what we'll get into with the rest of this program. There are a few news items that relate to terrible, terrible conditions in big cities. I spoke about this about a month ago. If you're watching the YouTube stream, you can see just some awful pictures. It is really hard to believe that our cities have become like they are now. This morning, I flipped on Fox News, the TV program Fox and Friends, and they were talking about the police. They were interviewing different police commissioners and police superintendents from areas in the Northeast, and they were talking about the disrespect for law enforcement. I wanted to get into something else that they were talking about today, and it's pretty active on Fox News' website. There's an article here that I want to go back. It's about a year old. This is from the California Globe. And the title of this article is Prop 47 is linked to increase in auto thefts, study says. The article says Proposition 47, the 2014 ballot measure that reduced sentences for some theft crimes and drug possessions, has not increased the overall crime rate in California as opponents predicted, but it appears to be linked to a rise in auto break-ins and thefts, a new study says. So why is this such a big deal? Right? There were opponents that were very much against reducing these sentences and changing some of the law. And yet those that supported it have come out now with a couple years' data saying, look, this is great. I'll read some quotes where prison population has decreased. But the problem is it hasn't decreased crime. This article says thefts from motor vehicles is increased 18% since the Prop 47 was passed. They said that it's given increase to larceny theft, about 9% increase. In San Francisco, auto break-ins soared 25% last year. So they changed the laws, they reduced the penalties, they reduced the severity of the crime, and guess what? There's more crime. Last year in San Francisco, more than 31,000 vehicles were broken into. Just in San Francisco, 31,000. This article continues. On the other hand, the study also found that Prop 47 has borne out some of its supporters' predictions. Drops in prison and jail populations and the costs related to them, reductions in recidivism or repeated crimes by people previously convicted of drug and property offenses. And so it's really a pretty interesting thought here. They needed to reduce prison population. And so they reduced the sentence. They commuted sentences. You could have your criminal record expunged if you were guilty of committing some of these what they call lesser crimes. Prop 47 reduced drug possession to a misdemeanor, punishable by no more than a year in jail. That ended the felony penalties. It also made nonviolent thefts of less than $950, including shoplifting, check forgery, and receiving of stolen property. It's a misdemeanor now instead of a felony. So, yes, they were very successful in saving monies by putting more criminals out on the street. They haven't promoted obedience. They just did away with the law and the repercussions for breaking the law. This lady said the reason police were making fewer arrests for crimes such as shoplifting and auto break-ins was that the state law prohibits officers from arresting anybody for a misdemeanor crime that the officer did not personally observe. Think about that. If a store owner calls in a theft, a shoplifting crime, they stop the guy that did it, the police show up, the man's in possession of stolen property, yet the officer cannot arrest him because he didn't personally see it himself. Not only that, it's no longer a felony if it's less than $1,000. I read one article that he said the shoplifters carry calculators. They know that if they keep it below a certain threshold, then it's a misdemeanor crime. Says for those people whose cars get burglarized, the police can do nothing. Isn't that shocking? That there's nothing they can do. Your car gets broken into, well, it's too bad. We're not even going to respond. There's nothing we can do. So why do I get into all this, petty theft or drug possession, some of those crimes? What's the big deal? Well, it's an example of failed liberal legislation. I want to read to you more quotes out of a rather lengthy article. You can find this. It was published yesterday on Fox News' website. It says San Francisco homeless stats soar. City blames big business. Residents blame officials. It's kind of been on the news because there's a lady that just grew tired in, I believe it was Sacramento. She grew tired of cleaning up the entrance to her shop with all the disgusting things that were set out there. And she said, I've just had it. I'm moving out of state. I can't deal with this. Now, Fox News, again, on their website has quite a few stories. I'll read to you just the introductory paragraph that explains why this is hitting the news today and yesterday. It said in the summer of 2019, Fox News embarked on an ambitious project to chronicle the toll progressive policies have had on the homeless crisis in four West Coast cities, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Portland, Oregon. They sent reporters into those cities, and they were just observing. In each city, we saw a lack of safety, sanitation, and civility. Residents, the homeless, and advocates say they've lost faith in their elected officials' ability to solve the issue. Most of the cities have thrown hundreds of millions of dollars at the problem only to watch it get worse. That is what we saw in San Francisco. Everybody's frustrated with what's in San Francisco. You can, again, look at the YouTube stream and just see pictures of tent cities, shanty towns, in some of the most beautiful cities in the United States. We've talked about this on a number of TDRs. Mr. Stephen Fleury has drawn attention to it, where you can walk in one neighborhood past the home of a billionaire, and within just a couple minutes, you're in a homeless encampment, where, as Fox News likened it, the problem's so severe that it rivals some third world nations. The misery of homelessness, mental illness, and drug addiction hits deep in San Francisco and has turned parts of the beautiful city into a public toilet. That's Fox News' report. these pictures are disturbing. You just have to step over, walk past an individual that's passed out, lifeless, laying on a sidewalk, maybe a syringe next to him. You have to step past and make sure you don't step into human waste. You can imagine how Satan the devil must love this spectacle. There's an example that they give in this article about this individual, a homeless man. He was caught on camera attacking a 26-year-old lady outside of her condo. He told her that he knocked her to the ground and told her that robots were coming to kill her. And he was offering his protection to her and said that I'll go kill somebody else just to prove to you that I'll protect you. I want you to trust me. So he was arrested. In court, he pleaded not guilty. And instead of being put in jail, Superior Court Judge, this lady, I won't even say her name, she released him over the objections of the district attorney's office. The public got upset, and so the judge changed her decision just a little bit and ordered him to wear an ankle monitor. Mind you, the seriousness of the crime, he was willing to go kill somebody for a deranged thought. It says a day later, well, it says on Monday, I'm presuming this was a day later, he was arrested again for an alleged assault that occurred in February. And it just goes on to show this is the recidivism that we were talking about, or it's an example of somebody that was arrested for a crime, they're released, and they go back and they commit the same crime. Fox News says what's equally frustrating is the city still manages to blow through hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars each year to address the crisis, and then blames everyone but themselves when the homeless count rises. In Sacramento, they just released a report that there's a 17% increase in homelessness since September 2017. 17% increase. And you know what's even more alarming? And this gets to the whole premise of what I'm talking about today, that it would have been 30% if they counted the same way that they did back in 2017. But they changed the rules of what defines homeless to drive down their numbers, to minimize the impact. 30% increase in homelessness in a city over the course of less than 2 years. The problem is difficult. There's an individual they interviewed. He's a transit worker. He's been in the transit system for 20 years. And he said that he too fears being homeless. His life is that much on the edge. He said what's happening is they're building too many condominiums and kicking the people out. I'm lucky they haven't kicked me out yet. The liberals like to talk about income gaps, inequality in wealth. They want to redistribute that. And so this is their effort. You're seeing it on the screen. That the liberal leadership has control of these cities. They are passing legislation. And what are the fruits? That's what we're talking about. What are the fruits? Listen to this. According to a 2018 report from from HUD, a family of four living in San Francisco making $117,000 a year qualifies as low income. Family of four, $117,000 a year, well, that's low income. Fox says, but to say the city hasn't tried to address the problem would be wrong. It has. The problem is that it backfired spectacularly. One of the biggest statewide blunders is Prop 47, supported by California Democratic Party and championed by the ACLU. The referendum was passed with a wide margin in 2014. I just read to you some of what they do, the minimizing the penalties, including illegal drugs. This reporter says the intention was to help, of course, but what it really wound up doing is that it made San Francisco more attractive to those who are both homeless and those who are drug addicts to move there. We are now finding that homelessness is increasing, drug addiction is increasing, and the number of people here, the numbers are increasing as well. Crime is increasing there. Break-ins to cars is increasing there. Again, 25% increase in vehicles being broken into in California in just a year. Said in June, listen to this, in June, San Francisco's Board of Supervisors voted 10-1 to block a pilot program that would allow the city to force people suffering from serious mental illness and drug addiction into treatment. So this idea came out and said, look, if we encounter people that are very sick, that need help, we want to force them to get treatment for mental illness, for drug addiction. The article says that didn't sit well with the liberals, who argued that it would be a deprivation of civil rights. 10-1, they said, no, we don't want to help people. That would infringe on their rights to be a drug addict. That would infringe on their rights to suffer through mental illness and terrorize other people around them. Think of that individual that was willing to go kill because he was protecting a young lady from robots. Well, in the eyes of this San Francisco Board of Supervisors, we don't want to interfere with their civil rights. It's ridiculous. This article concludes by saying the city is running out of strategies and people are moving out. I won't take time to read this. The title of this article, Governor Jerry Brown and the Democrats gutted the California criminal justice system while passing scores of gun control laws. Right? It talked about being opportunistic. Whenever there's a mass shooting, well, it's a chance to enact more laws to restrict gun control. And yet they're reducing penalties. They're releasing felons on the street. They can't keep everybody in jail. They're going to jail because they're breaking laws that they're passing. They're just making this problem worse and worse. This article reports that 6 to 10% of criminals are responsible for 70% of all crimes committed. It's really a very difficult situation. What I want to point out is, let's just look at the fruits. Go walk through your streets. Observe what's going on out there. It is alarming. You might remember just a couple weeks ago, United States President Donald Trump was harshly criticized for his tweet about Baltimore. He called out Representative Elijah Cummings and because Baltimore lies in this state representative, he's a U.S. congressman, in his district. Let me read to you. This is from the USA Today. And I just begin by quoting what Donald Trump said in his tweet. He said, Representative Elijah Cummings has been a brutal bully, shouting and screaming at the great men and women of the Border Patrol at the southern border, when actually his Baltimore district is far worse and more dangerous. So that's what Donald Trump said about Baltimore, that there was more chaos, that the conditions there were worse than the southern border. As this representative had a microphone and was calling out law enforcement and accusing them of all kinds of terrible things. Go walk through Baltimore, Mr. Cummings. The USA Today says Trump continued by saying conditions on the border were, quote, clean, efficient, and well-run, yet very crowded, whereas Cummings' district was, quote, a disgusting rat and rodent-infested mess. So that's what Donald Trump said. Of course, he was accused of being racist. So you can maybe identify for me, if you will, the racism in that statement. You can't. Now, listen to this. Trump did not present evidence for his claim about the district. That's what the USA Today said, that there is no evidence to support it. But you know what? The USA Today printed evidence to support Donald Trump's claim on August 14th, 2019. Can't turn the page here. Let me just read to you. They said on August 14th that Baltimore ranked as the third most dangerous city in the United States based on FBI 2017 Uniform Crime Report, a report on violent crime. So the USA Today runs a story that talks about how dangerous Baltimore is, the third most dangerous city in the United States. Much worse than the southern border. And here you have a leader from that district calling out the Border Patrol that are trying to stop illegal activities. Walk through your own city, Mr. Cummings. Let me quote you from the very biased, partisan, nationally divisive company, Orkin. I speak as a fool. Orkin is one of the nation's largest pest control companies. They go out and kill bugs and rodents. And in 2018, October 15th, 2018, they listed the top 50 rattiest cities in the United States. So the top 50 cities that are most rodent infested, guess who made the list? Baltimore, number 9. You see, it's time to look at the fruits. It's time to hold mankind and mankind under Satan's influence, I might add. It's time to hold them responsible for what's going on. Well, we're going to take a short break here, and when we return, I'll calm down. I wanted to relate what we heard over the weekend at church services to some classes that I'm privileged to teach here at the college. So we'll take a short break and be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Jesus Christ came preaching the gospel of the kingdom of God. Yet few preach about the kingdom of God today, for they have lost all knowledge of what it is. A prominent evangelist once said that the gospel of the kingdom of God is not for us today. Some denominations proclaim a gospel of grace, some what they call a gospel of salvation, most a gospel about Christ, some a social gospel. Some churches claim either that their particular denomination or Christianity as a whole constitutes the kingdom of God. But what does the Bible say? The truth about the kingdom of God is indeed a great mystery to this world. It's also the most glorious good news to those whose minds have been opened to the truth of the Bible. To remove the mystery from your Bible and to understand the truth about the soon coming kingdom of God, request Herbert W. Armstrong's masterful work, Mystery of the Ages. We offer it freely to those who are genuinely interested in understanding the Bible. You don't have to live in the fog of the unknown. You don't have to wonder why you were born or where this world is headed. The great mysteries of life can be made known to you if you choose to know. The choice is yours. To order the free material online, just visit our website at thetrumpet.com. And don't forget to tune in to kpcg.fm every weekday afternoon at 1 p.m. Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back. I do want to say that while I gave examples of an individual or a political party, my real focus and our real focus is on the problems of mankind. Mankind under the direction of Satan the devil. 2 Corinthians 4 verse 4 labels Satan appropriately as the god of this world. Liberalism, communism, socialism, you go through all of the isms of mankind, all of them are wrong. The point that I want to make is it's time to look at the fruits. It's getting to a point where you can't avoid just observing these fruits. It is tragic that individuals are trying to help, they're doing the best they can, but they refuse to listen to God. This past weekend, we had several messages, a Bible study, a sermon that relate directly to what I teach at the college. And I was very thankful for the research, the perspective, the presentation of those men that gave those messages. Mr. Wayne Turgeon, he's the dean or one of the deans at our college, and he's also the principal of Imperial Academy. And he spoke about being trustworthy. He talked about living a life that's reliable, that God can look on and trust. We also had orientation lectures leading into the start of the college year, and I'm very eager to build on those foundations. I won't give you all the details of Mr. Turgeon's message, but he did inspire me to want to change, to become more reliable and trusted and loyal to God. And that really ties in very well with the fundamentals of theology class that the sophomores are enrolled in here at college. There are 24 students in the class this year. They're young. Many of them were under 5 years old when the church fought the court case for Mystery of the Ages. And the challenge of this class is to help them want to fight for Mystery of the Ages, to make the court case real to them. We spend some time identifying personalities, but more than that, we dig deeper and we learn how Satan was able to get people to abandon these wonderful mysteries of God. That's how the class begins. It's just laying the foundation, just like today, identifying what is the cause. Let's look at the fruits. What is the cause of disasters in our cities? What is the cause of walking away from God's mysteries? What leads somebody to fight God's revelation? Well, Satan does. And that's the lesson mankind has to learn. We have to turn to God. Think about this quote from Gerald Fleury. He wrote the God Family Vision book. And if you don't have a copy, obviously you need to request one. You need to study it or restudy it. Think about what he says here. Your attitude toward Mystery of the Ages reveals a great deal about your conversion. It reveals a lot about you. He says, we've all heard the mystery. Now we will lose our eternal lives if we don't fight for it. And this was written in the midst of the court case, but it still applies today. You have to fight to stay attached to the vine. You have to stand up and fight, as this quote brings out. He says, God will let the enemies take it away from you if you don't love it. He asks, how much do we really care about Mystery of the Ages? And then he explains how they've been hidden from mankind's understanding for millennia. But they're available to us now. You can request Mystery of the Ages. You just heard an advertisement for it. You probably already have a copy. We need to study that book. How much do we love that truth? The class gives the students the equivalent of 55 Bible studies, an hour and 15-minute long class, 55 of those going through this one book. This is my sixth time teaching Fundamentals of Theology, and each year that I go through it, I can honestly say I look back with a little regret on how I taught it in the past, because the more you study that book, the more you get out of it. And of course, God supplements or builds on that revelation with new revelation. Make sure that you're getting back to those foundational books like Mystery of the Ages. I want to play a clip for you from Mr. Armstrong. This is right after the book was printed. You've probably heard this before. But just think about the emotion in this man that devoted his whole life to God. And this was the Rosetta Stone of restored truth. This was the milestone or the supreme accomplishment for Herbert Armstrong. And he was handing out to the college students at AC. So let me play that clip for you now.
The Bible is like a book that had been sort of cut up into about 2,000 or 3,000 pieces. And you have to get them all put together in the right order, or you can't understand them. This book puts them together. And yet this book is only a synopsis. You could say it's the gist of the Bible. The synopsis, it doesn't cover all of it, but it covers the main thread of the Bible, so you can understand the Bible and understand the other details when you read them in the Bible. It'll open up the Bible so that you understand it. That's what it is for. Make the Bible plain and clear and understandable. And God is such a great God when you come to really know him and who and what he is and how real he is. And I want to say that you need to read every word and you need to go over it more than once. You aren't going to get the full meat of this book in one reading. This is a book that after you've read it, you can read it a second time and then later a third time. This book is not intended to take the place of the Bible. It's intended to make it so that you will understand the Bible. You must read the Bible with it. And this is to make the Bible clear and understanding to you as you read it and bring its meaning out as you never saw it before. and I hope it'll be a blessing to you. I hope you will enjoy it. It'll give you great happiness and enjoyment. I hope you'll enjoy reading it. And I hope more than any other book you've ever read, except the Bible. And perhaps, in a sense, this makes even the Bible more clear and plain, and you'll enjoy the Bible more from now on. Will you forgive me if I get a little bit of thrill that this was then done? This book is out now. Today is a pretty big day in my life when I can hand the copies of this book out to each of you.
It's hard not to get emotional when you listen to his plea and his presentation of the book to the students, to the sophomores. And I think about the opportunity I have to teach this great class, a great subject. What a great admonition for all of us to get back into Mystery of the Ages, to make sure that we understand our Bible, to make sure that the Bible gives us direction, that it provides the solutions for us. I would encourage you, if you can make time, to go through Mystery of the Ages at least once a year. And if for some reason, if there's some way you don't have a copy yet, please go to our website. Please call our toll-free number and request a copy of Mystery of the Ages. Well, I was going to take another break, but I don't have time, so I'm going to just carry on with this Trumpet Daily Radio program. The other class that I teach this year is entitled Fundamentals of Physical Science. And we really do need a well-rounded education. This class develops our mathematical and scientific skills. It's a class that is not unique in that it's different than the Bible classes we offer. We also teach home economics, speech, history, English, business. We work with IT and IS, agriculture, science, sociology, whether it be comparative religion, marriage and family. We teach Hebrew, archaeology, international relations. It's a well-rounded curriculum. Of course, the Bible forms the foundation for the classes we teach here, but science is not another theology class as taught here at Armstrong College. In the autobiography of Herbert Armstrong, he said, "The type of college soon became clear, crystal clear in my mind. It must be a liberal arts college offering a general cultural education with biblical and theological training offered as one of several major courses." You can look up on your own later just a definition of liberal arts college. We do strive to teach the whole man. We have a work program, as we've talked about. We have social activities. It's a learning environment that is really spectacular. In the science class, we talk about significant historical scientific accomplishments or personalities. And what we focus on is the observation, the findings, not the man, not the woman. If you look at science, you could easily divide it into a sequence of major scientific revolutions. In our class, we focus on the 19th, 20th, and 21st centuries. And I focus on that because the rise of scientific observation and the discovery of law coincides really well with God bestowing the birthright promises on the United States and Britain. And some of the most influential scientists are contemporaries of God's end time Elijah, Herbert Armstrong. What's interesting, if you observe all of this, if you just step back and look, you see God restoring truth, God providing answers. Mankind is able to observe the fruits. And if he was unbiased, it would absolutely 100% support what God is teaching. But Satan is out there with his counterfeit and his focus on a godless world, on destruction. The second half of the class, we focus on biology and how the human body functions, the laws of radiant health. We'll talk about genetics, discuss how the life is in the blood, the function of the brain, the spirit in man. But we'll also get into news or topical issues such as immunization, genetic counseling, and fad diets. The last part of the year, the last quarter, we get into the topic of climate change. We're going to study remote sensing, measuring climate as opposed to weather. We'll examine the past 150 years of alarm and exaggerated statements by environmentalists. I went to the University of Colorado and graduated with a degree there in science. And we were really indoctrinated with this concept of deforestation and how within 10 years, 15 years, you couldn't find a tree on the planet. That's what they told us. And yet, look around. Look around. There is evidence of fraud among scientists, among researchers, even among government entities. Now, I'm going to play back several clips here for you to demonstrate this point. And again, I just want us to consider observation. Observation without bias. Walk through these cities. Look at the problems. And then try to see the solution. Clip number two is from CBS, and this played back in 2009. We'll go ahead and play that clip now.
Hundreds of world leaders and climate change experts are descending on Copenhagen to try to come up with a new pact to slow global warming. And thousands of protesters across Europe today were trying to send them a message. It's time to stop talking and make a deal. But reaching that deal has now been complicated by what's being called ClimateGate, a string of hacked private emails between global climate change scientists in the U.S. and Europe, which have cast doubts on the very science this summit is based on. The emails seem to show that some of the world's top experts decided to exclude or manipulate some research that didn't help prove global warming exists. 1998 was the hottest year since record-keeping began, but the temperature went down the next year, and it's only spiked a couple of times since. An email from 1999 shows scientists worked hard to demonstrate an upward trend. They talk of using a trick to hide the decline in global temperatures. It worked like this. When temperature readings gathered from studying tree rings showed what looked like a decline in temperatures from the 1980s to the present, the scientists added in measurements taken later by more modern instruments, which gave them the answer they wanted. The scientists say the emails are being misinterpreted.
A lot of charges have been made that I think are quite unjustified, cherry-picking information and not taking it quite out of context and misrepresenting what it's actually saying.
Senator James Inhofe, a climate change skeptic, says the emails prove the global warming threat is exaggerated. He wants a congressional investigation.
We're relying upon that science for a bunch of stuff that we would be doing that would lose a lot of jobs and really affect Americans. I do believe that an investigation would show that they have clearly manipulated the data.
The official U.S. position hasn't changed, that climate change is real and needs to be addressed.
Climate change is happening. I don't think that's anything that is, quite frankly, among most people in dispute anymore.
Two major carbon producers, India and China, agree. They just announced they'll set goals to lower their carbon emissions. Though the U.S. Congress hasn't agreed on an American plan to lower emissions, President Obama's visit to Copenhagen at the end of the meeting instead of the beginning, as originally planned, is being taken as a positive sign.
As President Obama said, he will come to Copenhagen if a deal is feasible. And I have always said, and we have in the United Nations said, that while nothing is guaranteed, the world is ready for a deal.
But the leaked memos have given ammunition to critics of climate change. So climate change supporters fear Copenhagen may only produce the framework for an agreement that then will be passed on to next year. Jeff?
All right, Kimberly Dozier from our Washington Bureau tonight. Kimberly, thank you.
It's kind of refreshing to see a report like that. Now, again, it carries its bias. And yet they do present, that's CBS. I don't think you'd see a report like that today on CBS. It does show that there is this data manipulation. And how ironic for that scientist to defend himself saying that the critics are cherry-picking their data when that's exactly what they're doing. If they don't find data that supports their supposition, then they ignore it. Or if they make observations that are contrary to their thinking, they change the data, not their thinking. It's ridiculous. A couple article titles here for you. This is conflicting data. How fast is the world losing its forests? This is from 2018. They say that the data is really hard to wrap your mind around. They said the drastic difference extends to data from individual countries. In the United States, China, Australia, Canada, Russia, and several other countries, the FRA shows forest gains, while the GFW shows a big loss. The two data sets were more or less in alignment 20 years ago, but have been divergent ever since. So guess what? About 20 or 30 years ago, I was in college, and they were saying, well, yeah, there aren't going to be any trees left. Think of those countries, the forests in the United States, China, Canada, Russia. They're actually increasing. That's contrary to what they said. So as this report shows, they manipulate the data, as that CBS report pointed out. Another article here from July 30th, 2019, just a couple days ago, talking about hidden NOAA data or NOAA temperature data reveals that six of the last 9 months were actually below normal in the United States, and NOAA can't even get June right. So here's a government entity that is sponsored by tax dollars that's supposed to measure climate, and they can't get their story straight. And you've heard how this is the hottest year ever, how all of the ice is going to melt, sea level's going to rise. You've heard all of that in the last week or two. And they said, this article says, with media outlets screaming hottest ever for the world in June and July, the opportunistic climate crusaders use those headlines to push the idea of climate crisis. The reality is, for the United States, so far in 2019, it has been below normal, below normal. And they go on and use the data from NOAA to prove that point. But that's not what the liberals play. Well, I don't have time to play any more of these clips. I had several others. There was an MIT scientist that basically was critical of those that manipulate data. There was another clip that I had that talked about if you step back and look at cycles in climate, there are times where the earth warms. There are times when it cools. And if you go back and look far enough, you see that these cycles are consistent. We happen to be in an upward trend, perhaps, of a certain cycle that yields a certain measurement. And if it's just looked at in that moment in time, it looks very alarming. And yet, if you step back and look at, say, a 100-year cycle or a 1,000-year cycle, you find that it's quite normal. Fake news, fake science. Our class is going to focus on critical thinking, about questioning sources. We will do our best to understand the science behind observation, but we will use God to explain what happens, at least the foundation. Mr. Armstrong was inspired initially to found a college of liberal arts. He knew that if the work was to be effective, we had to be able to observe the world around us. We had to be able to interact with the world around us. It's not just all Bible, Bible, Bible. That forms the foundation. But we need to be excellent at observing, at thinking. In Isaiah 1, God calls, I think it's Isaiah 1, tells us to come reason with him. Are we capable of reasoning with God? Mankind in general is not. That is the lesson for today as we look at all of the stories in the news. Climate change is in the news. Deforestation is in the news. I think it was even at the top of the hour on the news feed that we have here that we play on KPCG talking about deforestation in Brazil. It is time to be skeptical of the conclusions. It's also time to be aware of observation. God needs mankind to learn some lessons. And those lessons are going to come from looking to God and then examining the world around us. Our education at Armstrong College is based on God's law, on his way of life. We have true academic freedom because Christ himself sets the foundation for us. In John 8, verse 32, it says, "You shall know the truth." You shall know it. You have to learn it. And the truth shall make you free. If you're a regular listener to our programming on KPCG, if you watch the Key of David program, then you recognize the education we give our students here is shared with you too. You recognize the truth. We do observe the world around us. We watch, we pray. We're privileged to have the answers. So keep listening. Thank you for your support for our program. And do your best to devote even more time to learning from the educational materials we provide for you. Well, I've reached the top of the hour. It's time for me to move on with my day. Same thing for you. We sure thank you for listening. Your regular host, Stephen Fleury, will be with you tomorrow. And if you have time, send in your thoughts or comments to td@kpcg.fm. Have a wonderful day.